Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makwane Maja. Let's get into our first news story of today. And there is drama inside the government of Gauteng, with Premier Panyaza Lesufi being forced to appoint EFF provincial leader Nkululeko Dunga as the MEC of Finance in the Gauteng government. This was announced at a media briefing yesterday, and Lesufi said that this was a move aimed at stabilizing the province, but also basically said, yeah, look, I didn't want to do this, but I had to keep the coalition together. He said, quote, "The possible instability was going to be the hallmark of this administration. Last week, the adoption of the adjustment budget was delayed by a week due to disagreements with political parties within the legislature. It is within this context that the national leadership of the ANC gave us the go-ahead to engage with other political parties to strengthen the Executive Council. The EFF and ANC had been at loggerheads for weeks across Gauteng, with the EFF threatening to leave the coalition governments with the ANC in Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni, and even in Gauteng province, over a variety of things. But one of the most recent was that the Ekurhuleni mayor, Mayor Kakaza, had reshuffled the mayoral team in February and reduced the number of EFF mayoral MMC positions, from 4 to 2, taken the EFF out of control of the finances of Ekurhuleni. Lesufi was now facing the prospect of having the coalitions in two of the most important municipalities in the province collapse and not being able to pass a budget in Gauteng. The ANC, until now bringing the EFF officially into the coalition, was running a minority coalition government with a number of smaller parties, like I think Rise Mzansi and I think the IFP being involved, but not having a majority in the Gauteng legislature. And so the ANC had been talking to MK, the EFF, and the DA, all in attempts to try and pass budget. They weren't getting anywhere until they gave the EFF this position in the MEC finance portfolio. So I think this is the most senior position an EFF person has been in government. I don't think there have been any EFF people in provincial governments up till now. So it's a bit of a milestone for the EFF and shows them being placed more at the center of governing. But Makwane, what really stands out to me about this is essentially Panyaza Lesufi making, to borrow a phrase, explicit what was implicit. That the ANC in Gauteng was essentially running a coalition government with the EFF and MK in everything but name until now. And that Lesufi's project in Gauteng is to try and show the ANC what can be done if you cut the DA out of the GNU. This is the alternative, you know, the progressive alliance model of running the government. And I get the feeling that it's not coming off great, considering the state of service delivery in Joburg and Ekurhuleni. And now, well, there are some problems with this appointment. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it appears Lesufi is deeply regretting his decisions, because I've frankly never seen him look so morose and downtrodden. He also expressed like personal anguish over the loss of an MMC that he was close with, Madume Chilwane, who is one of the more interesting casualties from this fallout between the EFF and the ANC. Because if you remember Madume Chilwane, he is the person that the Thabo Mbeki Foundation made findings against when it was investigating allegations of racism at the Pretoria High School for Girls. And it described him, his collaboration with Lesufi, as being a fishing expedition, basically grown man fishing into high school girls' WhatsApp disputes and trying to racialize it and capitalize on it politically. This is who Madume Chilwane was. And now he has been displaced by the shuffle. He's been replaced by the former MEC of Finance in Johannesburg, in Gauteng, Lebogang Maile. I thought you wanted to chime in there. But yeah, so you can tell that Lesufi's professionally and personally affected by this decision, and the regret is written all over his face. But we must talk about this EFF candidate, Nkululeko Dunga, who was an EFF MEC for finance in Ekurhuleni, where the Ekurhuleni mayor, Xhakaza, decided to dismiss him because of how badly he was running the finances there by Ekurhuleni, right? Like, the Auditor General made qualified findings against the Ekurhuleni administration while he was stewarding their finances, where a year before he was in that position, Ekurhuleni had been one of two metros to receive a clean audit. So this guy comes in and he reverses the clean audits, plunges the Ekurhuleni finances into deep trouble to the extent that ANC members on the ground are worried and flag to the national element of the ANC to say, you guys need to intervene in this coalition with the EFF because it's going to ruin, at the time, their 2024 election prospects. So this is now the guy who has been handed over keys to the finances of the wealthiest province, not just in the country, but on the African continent. This is the guy who is now the MEC for finance in Gauteng.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing. And it's all really ultimately because Lesufi is so dogmatically, ideologically positioned that he refuses essentially to compromise on any of the things he might need to form a stable government with the DA. And originally that was on the cards, right? The DA voted for him as premier, and then he suddenly went, oh, actually, not giving you any portfolios. I think, what did he offer the DA originally? Something like sport or something like that.
It was agriculture? I remember agriculture.
Yeah, agriculture.
Yeah, now, it was.
You know, there are farms.
Yeah.
In exactly. Gauteng, but that's not exactly, you don't think Gauteng agriculture together, you know? So it's I can't say I'm particularly sad for him because I think this is very much a political crisis of his own making. But what's really interesting to me is that, you know, ideally this could have been solved by forcing the ANC at the municipal levels to bend to the will of the provincial leadership or the national leadership and basically make nice to the EFF, stop antagonizing them. You know, we are coming up to the local government elections. But Lesufi wasn't able to do that. And I think this is an overwhelmingly big problem with the ANC. It's kind of why no one, I think, can actually save the ANC, is that no one effectively has control over the party anymore. I think every single faction, every single region is essentially doing its own thing. And they're too sort of fractious and divided and dug in to properly come under control, unless you had a very strong, very capable leader at the top, which I don't think is anywhere on the cards right now. So I think this is also why, you know, the talk of maybe Patrice Motsepe coming into governance, you know, as potentially being this person who could sort of save the ANC. He's definitely, I think, the most popular and most capable potential candidate who's being thrown around for leadership of the ANC. But I think even he would have real trouble just because of how dysfunctional the party appears to have become. I don't know. That's a much broader point, McCorney, but what do you make of that?
I agree. I think by trying to save the ANC's face in this coalition and stitching up or doing this reshuffle and moving people around, which led to the installation of Dunga, he has ultimately signed off on his own fate, right? Because this guy's reputation will precede him. I mean, luckily, there will be restraints on him because the budget's already been voted for, and it was voted for before he was announced as MMC. So he just basically has to execute on that budget. But even that should be a problem because when he was MEC for Finance in Ekurhuleni, the AG made findings of some 20 million worth of irregular expenditure. So I think Lesufi has failed at trying to save the ANC by further, you know, endangering its prospects when already there's so many eyes on Gauteng. There's so much attention paid to Gauteng in the upcoming local government elections that, I honestly believe this is the final nail in his coffin. And it's hard to feel bad for him, particularly because of what you described, just his commitment to dogma rather than pragmatism and seeing to what's in the best interest of Gauteng, right? They're clearly trying to settle political scores. And it would be in his best interest, actually, to have the DA co-govern with them, because my theory is still that the DA makes the ANC look good, right? Because they can govern, and the ANC can get credit for that, claim credit for that. Like with the fuel hikes, for example, you know, we know the DA pushed for the fuel levies to be removed from the fuel price at pump. The ANC can claim that as a victory because the minister is Kodongwana, who is an ANC minister. So they make the ANC look good. And Banyaza could have been benefiting from this all along. But obviously, he has his own ambitions. And as you say, different factions of the ANC are allowed to run rogue and to pursue their own interests, even if it's to the detriment of the collective ANC.
I think he also would have been able to spread blame because, you know, Gauteng, even if it had the most perfect government ever, is not going to be turned around overnight. And so even if you had the DA in the coalition, he could, you know, sort of make them shoulder some of the blame for things that were going wrong, and it would dent their election prospects. So I think the ANC has kind of unwittingly maneuvered itself into a really bad position in Gauteng in the local for the upcoming local government elections. Letting the DA into the tent earlier, being harsher on the EFF, all these things, I think really could have maybe at least blunted the DA's attack on them. But this is exactly the scenario the DA would want coming up to the local government election. They're most comfortable in opposition, and now they get to run properly hard against service delivery issues going into the next local government election in the big metros in Joburg, Ekurhuleni, Joburg, and Tshwane. And I think this is setting the stage for a very bad ANC election, but obviously we'll have to see.
Let me comment on that element of because I and also, you know, how long it'll take to actually turn Johannesburg around, because in the process of trying to convince people to vote, those are some of the arguments they put to me. It's, you know, even if somebody good comes in to govern Gauteng or Joburg, it'll take years, it'll take decades. I agree. But that's just an argument for us starting sooner, right, rather than postponing it till much later. But also the dispersion of blame and checking into the DA, there's no amount of doing that, of evading responsibility, that will ever absolve the ANC, because we know how much longer than the DA they've been in those positions, right? And I think rational people can see that. So for me, that's an argument for us removing the ANC earlier rather than later, rather than when the city is in complete rubble.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think from the ANC's perspective, but I take your point completely. Okay, let's move on to our next story. This has been sort of bubbling away over the last couple of weeks, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. The South African Post Office is heading towards yet another financial oblivion. The latest parliamentary briefing from the business rescue practitioners who are trying to save the post office say that just to keep the post office alive for the next 6 months, they require Parliament to give another 350 million rand to the post office to not to modernize it, but just to keep the lights on, as the reporting suggests. There has been some discussion. The Communications and Digital Technologies Minister from the DA, Tsoli Malatsi, told Parliament the department was working to unlock funding, including a 700 rand million allocation that must be shared across struggling entities such as Centec and the post office. But that's all needs to be passed by Parliament. And there's a bit of resistance because people are asking, well, you know, the post office has been in a bad position for a very long time. How many more bailouts do there need to be? If a bailout is not forthcoming, the business practitioners say they will be forced to liquidate all of the assets of the post office. And they warn that the return on those assets will probably be quite low because they'll have to sell them immediately. They say, basically, the thing is in an absolute crisis. The leadership of the post office says that all of this is downstream of the fact that traditional post has kind of fallen apart. Obviously, you know, we don't really send letters that much anymore. The post office is still primarily used by very rural communities, sometimes for certain documents and post, and also primarily to distribute grants to some people. There are a bunch of places to get grants. I think you can get them from not just the post office, but the post office is an important place to get grants. So the post office's leadership say that they want to change into a part logistics operator, part digital services, part government services node, you know, sort of a, I don't know, a logistics and government hub that you could get a whole bunch of stuff done, maybe compete with some of the private parcel delivery services, that sort of thing. But yeah, you know, I'm a bit skeptical that that transition can be managed, particularly when, you know, it's not like the post office discovered yesterday that mail was declining as an important part. And, you know, at stake are 5,800 jobs. And I think that personally, and I'm no means an expert on this particular topic, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to justify really saving those jobs, particularly when it costs millions and millions of rands that could be spent far better. But Corneel, what's your take on the story?
It's such a difficult one, especially when you start counting like the staff complements and just possibly how many families are reliant on this. But I think that shouldn't be an argument necessarily for actually eventually winding down the post office, because clearly it's not in use, right? So we'd be creating jobs for the sake of employment rather than a value add, which is not a good idea, clearly. and so I think whilst it is a very difficult conversation and a conclusion to arrive at, it must be done. Unfortunately, I don't think it will. I think the government is committed to, you know, extending and postponing and deferring the eventual end of the post office. And even now we're hearing ideas about a post bank, which I think is like a financial element of the post office, right? So they're basically trying to pivot away from mail and the use of mailing parcels and people using the post office as a place to collect grants to actually operating a financial institution. So I do think that the sun has set on the post office, and it doesn't seem like even the runway that's being discussed, the 350 million, is a drop in the ocean of what's being discussed as the amount that's required to implement some of those turnaround strategies to reform the post office. The Daily Maverick is floating amounts north of 3 billion rands, which obviously this just government just doesn't have. So yeah, I think it's just one of those sunk cost fallacy instances again, and benefits of being a state-owned entity is where you never actually get to meet your fate when your business has come to the end, but rather that, you know, there's pivots and iterations and other ways of just prolonging the inevitable.
Right, and I think that's the bottom line, is that in its current state, the state cannot possibly be trusted to run SOEs except on the barest sort of most critical ones. We've just seen basically every single SOE, except I think the forestry's SOE. I may be wrong on that, but I think that's the only one that's made any money in the last few years. Going, you know, bleeding huge amounts of money, going belly up, almost taking the country with it in the case of Eskom. And the fewer SOEs we have to manage, the better. They are unfortunately not serving purpose. There's been some complaints saying there's no country in the world with a private mail carrier, I think was one defense I've seen of the post office. Not sure if that's true. It possibly is, but I think that's not really an argument, because we are in a situation where they just, you know, as long as we have all the problems that cause our state to fail in so many ways, political interference, cater deployment, preferential procurement, et cetera, you know, no one's going to run the post office well, because it's going to become a nest of looting and cronyism and all that sort of thing. So I think liquidation is unfortunately probably the only answer. Adam, any final thoughts on this one?
I do take the concern that they have about, you know, the collection of grants, but I think we probably have more supermarkets like ShopRite, Checkers, Pick and Pay in a kilometer radius in South Africa than you do post offices. So there is a way of actually solving that problem. Yeah. The issue is there's no
political will. That seems an eminently solvable problem, for sure.
Exactly. It's the matter of political will, right, rather than of ideas of how to actually go about navigating that. That seems to be what gets stuck in moving this process towards liquidation.
All right, let's move on to our last story. So we're going to play a video here. I will describe it afterwards for audio-only listeners. It's not a very long video. Of an incident that is being looked into regarding the deputy mayor of the municipality of Bitu, which is the area sort of around Plettenberg Bay. Let me play the clip. So, in the video, a woman runs down the street shouting and celebrating, firing a gun into the air, and there's a sort of loud crack sound, as I'm sure you heard if you're listening on audio only. Appears to be a real gun. As she pulls the trigger, I don't know if you can even see this on the YouTube, because I'm sure YouTube will compress this video, a bullet casing seems to fly out of the gun. So the woman in that video is allegedly deputy mayor of Bitu, Nokuzola Kolwapi, who, according to the allegations, was celebrating her son's graduation and decided perhaps to get a little bit too enthusiastic, it seems, run down the street. Two cases of discharging a firearm in public and the pointing of a firearm, as well as reckless endangerment charges, have been laid with the local police. The deputy mayor is from the Ikwezi political movement, which is a very small political party with one seat in the Bitu municipality in alliance with the DA. She has denied the allegations. She says that she was not firing a gun and the object in her hand was a toy, which is, I think we could call the Julius Malema defense, because that's what he said when he was charged with a very similar thing. Okone, look, I mean, I like firearms, you know, but come on, this is, obviously, there needs to be a court case and all that, but it's not looking good here for the deputy mayor.
Straight to jail on all, guilty on all charges. That would be my finding if I was the judge, but I am not. I'm just a random podcaster on the internet. But this is unacceptable. She is in the middle of the street whilst discharging this firearm. She's not on some plot in the middle of nowhere where the Mgiti is being held. No, this is, you can see, this is in a neighborhood with people walking by on the streets, not just people who have come to the celebration, but like random passerbyers are captured in this film. And for this to be the deputy mayor, I think people who are tempted to, as I said in the pre-discussion, but people who are tempted to give her the benefit of the doubt, since we've contrasted her to Julius Malema, as this is very much his defense, you know, they just seem to undermine our intelligences, that she was firing off a toy gun and she's in a celebratory mood. Like, she's very festive. You can see these people are very happy. They're excited. But under no circumstances. My parents celebrated
that hard when I graduated high school.
No, and as I said, neither did mine. So I need to have a conversation with my mother after this. Maybe that's the problem. But under no circumstances should you be brandishing a gun in a neighborhood as an ordinary citizen, let alone as a deputy mayor.
And what could potentially turn this into a bit of a political crisis of sort is that, as far as I understand, that coalition in Bitu is held together by the Ikwezi political movement, which provides the DA, and there's another party, another small party involved there, called the Active United Front, who together with the DA hold the coalition in that municipality. So to make matters worse, apparently at the celebration, the speaker, who's from the Active United Front, and the mayor, who's from the DA, were in attendance as well. So I think it's going to be a little bit awkward for them as well. But just, you know, when I looked up the Ikwezi political movement, because I'd never heard of them before, they seem to be based mostly in this area. The headline I got was, a new political party has an all-woman candidate list for the upcoming local government elections. This was posted a couple of years ago. So maybe this was all an act of feminist defiance to show that also female politicians could, allegedly recklessly discharge firearms in public, just like our male politicians.
Yeah, this is a case of equality. Definitely one of those. But yeah, she will find out from sharing the same defense as Julius Malema that the law really does apply equally across the sexes, as she should. But also the political consequences, she were clearly not weighed in this, because these three parties together who were in attendance at this Ngidi did not think to quickly call the deputy mayor to the side and stop her from brandishing a gun at community members.
Well, to be fair, when someone is waving a gun around, it's kind of difficult to approach them and calm them down.
I did think of that, Nicholas. That's exactly when you don't want to be approaching somebody. It's when they've got a gun under their armpit and they're waving it around. So, yeah.
As our colleague Terence Corrigan would say, top tip, don't fire a gun in the air, don't wave it around, even if it's blanks, just don't. This is not how people should be using firearms. Absolute madness. Anyway, I think on that note, we're going to leave you all for the Easter weekend. Happy Easter to everyone celebrating. I hope you all enjoy the long weekend. It is always a very welcome part of the year that sort of, as we get a third of the way into the year in South Africa, we get this bunch of holidays. So I'm going to very much enjoy myself, I must say. And with that, I hope you all have an excellent and wonderful weekend. We will see you all next week, Tuesday. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.